Shango, moju baile, Shango, oni walo, eri jaja, ori shako, eru male, Shango.
Is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day.
Okay.
It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Brother, brother, there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Father, father, we don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer. For only love can conquer hate.
inside. Don't punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see.
My brothers and sisters, and welcome this afternoon, this evening, to the Black Reality Think Tank. My name is William Rogers, and I am your host. I am so happy to be here this afternoon. We've kind of been away from the broadcast for about 2 or 3 weeks. Had to adjust some things with, how family life is and family issues, and as well as to get some equipment changed. And so we were able to do that very successfully, and so now we are back on and we are ready to go at it. We have a wonderful, wonderful dialogue this afternoon. We have a wonderful panel guest, and normally, as we always have in the waiting for us, is our listening audience, you, the listening audience, who can participate. And for those of you who are on the internet, you can give us a call at 215 area code 490-9832. And you can call in as well, or either ask a question, make a comment, or you can continue to just listen via the internet. So it's really a great opportunity. We're going to be doing what we do normally, our annual roundup. Well, not only annually, we do it quarterly. And we have a winter roundup. We do a spring, summer, fall. And so now we're doing our fall roundup, where we look at the political and the economic agendas and try to determine how all of this relates to the African-American community. And I don't think any well-informed mind would not agree that a lot's been going on. And so we want to take a look at all that. What does that mean for Black folk? And I'm calling this the butterfly effect. And the butterfly effect is a concept that comes out of something called chaos theory. And that is the idea that you look at specific events in the present and you make a determination what impact that they would have in the future and how big that impact is and what would that look like. And so that's what we're doing. We are having a look at all of these things that have happened over the last month and couple of weeks. And what does all that mean for the future for us, for African Americans? So we're going to be looking at things like the Brett Kavanaugh case. We're going to be looking at the activity of our dear brother, Bill Cosby. We're going to be looking at the upcoming elections that are going to be taking place in November, what that means, the whole voter registration idea. They just kind of take a look economically at how the black community looks. And as I said, we've assembled a very powerful and wonderful group of community activists and political thinkers who are going to just give us their idea and kind of talk about what they see. And then hopefully you'll call and you'll tell us too what you see. And we'd be glad to hear that, because we need to have that. We need to know that as we prepare for our families and our community. We need to know how to adjust ourselves, know what to do. So it's always good to dialogue like this. And so this is a very constructive one, and I'm so happy to do that. We are here, as you know, every Tuesday evening from 8 to 10 p.m. This is a production of the Sankofa Historical Society. Our program is sponsored by Motherland Media, who I will talk about in a few minutes in terms of with their program. They also do something here, as well as some of the other things. This is airing via the timeforanawakening.com radio network. And so we are very happy that we are on here, on this platform. We also do a platform on Saturdays, Black Reality on Saturdays, on the Blog Talk Network. And there we have a group of young producers who design programs and talk about things that are relevant to young people, the 20s, 30s, and the 40s group. And they talk about some dynamic subjects, and there have been some very good dialogues for that. All of our programs are archived. All of our programs you can access either through the timeforanawakening.com website. Just go www.timeforanawakening.com website, and you will see a lot of the programs there in the platform. And you can just tag on, listen to any of them you like to, 24/7. And then you can go to the Blog Talk Radio platform and look at their archive and get any of our programs and listen to those. You can also go to our Black Reality Think Tank Facebook website, and you can get them there. We are listed there as well. And I'm going to be talking about some other programs that are on both the Time for an Awakening as well as on the Blog Talk system as we move on into the program. Okay, well, as you know, always in the Black Reality Think Tank, we give honor to our ancestors. You know, if we honor them, helps our souls to breathe, as the saying. Think about the words of the great Fannie Lou Hamer. We must always praise the bridges that brought us over. So that is clearly one of the things that we do here. And today we are going to honor a sister. I'm sure that most of you will be familiar with her name, maybe not her work, but her name. Her name is Alice Dunbar Nelson. Alice Dunbar Nelson. She is the spouse of Paul Lawrence Dunbar, the great poet. But Sister Dunbar had her own career. She was a gifted writer as well. So we want to kind of talk about her a little bit. She was born in New Orleans, Louisiana, and her biographer makes specific the fact that she was a light-skinned and racially ambiguous appearance, which gave her entrance into associations, as well as she was able to cross racial and ethnic lines because of her mulatto status. Alice Dunbar Nelson graduated from college in 1892, and she taught for 6 years, editing the woman's page of a New Orleans paper in her free time. She began publishing her poetry and short stories at the age of 20. In 1895, she began a correspondence with a man by the name of Paul Lawrence Dunbar. And they first met in 1897 when Alice moved to teach in Brooklyn, New York. Dunbar Nelson helped found the White Rose Mission. The White Rose Mission. It was a home for girls, and when Paul Dunbar returned from a trip to England, they were married. She left her school position so they could move to Washington, D.C. They came from very different racial backgrounds, however. Her light skin often allowed her privileges. She was able to pass, while his more African appearance kept him out where she was able to enter. He drank very heavily. He drank more heavily than she could tolerate. And he was also accused of having extramarital affairs. They also disagreed about their writing styles. She denounced his use of black dialect in poetry. they fought sometimes violently. Alice Dunbar Nelson left Paul Dodge Dunbar in 1902, moving to Wilmington, Delaware. He died 4 years later. Alice Dunbar Nelson worked in Wilmington at Howard High School as a teacher and administrator for 18 years. She also worked at State College for colored students and Hampton Institute, directing summer classes. In 1910, Alice Dunbar Nelson married a man by the name of Henry Arthur Callis, but they separated the next year. She married then Robert J. Nelson. He was a journalist in 1916. In 1915, however, though, Alice Dunbar Nelson worked as a field organizer in her region for women's suffrage. During World War I, Alice Dunbar Nelson served with the Women's Commission on the Council of National Defense and the Circle of Negro War Relief. She worked in 1920 with the Delaware Republican State Committee, and she helped found the Industrial School for Colored Girls in Delaware. She organized for anti-lynching reforms, and she served from 1928 to 1931 as the Executive Secretary of the American Friends Interracial Peace Committee. During the Harlem Renaissance, Alice Dunbar Nelson published numerous stories and essays in the Crisis Magazine, the Opportunity Magazine, the Journal of Negro History, and the Messenger. And the reason that I wanted to look at her today, and one of the famous things that she did is she created what was called reading clubs, where they would go throughout the city and read excerpts from books or from their own writing. And they used that as a way of teaching. That is something that no longer is practiced as much as it used to. I'm sure that there are some folk that attempt to do these what we call reading clubs. But she was very well known for that. And she published several books. She did one called The Goodness of St. Rock and Other Stories, which was done in 1898. She wrote a book called The Masterpieces of Negro Eloquence, The Best Speeches Delivered by the Negro from the Days of Slavery to the Present Time. She did that in 1914. And that's a dynamic book. It's still available in the library. I think you might want to take a look at that. And then Alice Dunbar Nelson wrote something called Dunbar Speaker and Entertainer in 1920. And so she was a very gifted poet as well, and she published many poems. So we are happy to be able today to present this discussion on Alice Dunbar Nelson. Thank you. Okay, we are ready to begin our conversation. We have, as I said, a very wonderful panel of individuals that are ready. They are here, and they are all assembled, ready to go. And then plus we've got some of our wonderful guests who are always around and to help us, you know, support. So I'm going to greet each of our panelists, and then once I greet you, I will open your mic, and then I'll leave that open, and I'll bring it in, and then we'll begin our first question. The first person that I like to is kind of new to this forecast, but we are happy to have him. His name is Mr. Nkosi Knight. He is from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. He has been on the Black Reality Think Tank on the Blog Talk spectrum, but I think this is his first here on the Time for Awakening. So good evening, Mr. Knight.
Hey, Jambo. Hello, everyone.
Great. Okay. All right. Our next guest is not a stranger to the Time for Awakening. She has appeared several times here, as well as on our Blog Talk site as well. She is a doctor. She has a degree in looking at family therapy and work around the family and building the family. She has a ministry as well as an agency. And she has written a book on several issues that affect the Black family. And her name is Dr. Alice Belcher. Good afternoon. Good evening, Dr. Belcher.
Good evening, Baba. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Thank you very much for being here. Our next guest is from my hometown, Durham, North Carolina. He is a wonderful brother. He has been also, he is no stranger to our program. He does listen often, and he gives wonderful comments. So I asked him to join us today. He is, like myself, retired. We are all graduates of Hillside High School in Durham, and so we just have a wonderful bonding in terms of our birthplace. His name is Mr. Herbie White. Good afternoon, Mr. White.
Good evening, Dr. Rogers, and to everyone else on the panel, Hotep.
Hotep, all right. And then, last but not least, is my dear brother. He is also the, he has his own program here called Africa Perspectives, and we'll talk about that in a minute. He's also, his network, his system, which is called Motherland Media, sponsors this program here on Time for Awakening. And he has been very instrumental in the community. He's a former firefighter. He's a dynamic community brother and community activist, and he has some wonderful ideas and things about politics, and so we just can't wait to hear from him. I welcome my dear brother, Oshiemi Adelabu. Good afternoon, Brother Adelabu.
Good evening, Doc Rogers. How are you this evening, and
wonderful.
All to all the other panelists this evening and your listeners.
Okay.
Truly glad to be here.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, my brother. Thank you so much. Okay, so we've got our four guests that are here, ready to go, and we have been inundated over the last month, couple of months and weeks, with all kinds of strange news. So I think I'd like to start off with this whole issue of my good dear and brother, blessed brother, Bill Cosby. As you know, Bill Cosby has been, he was charged and convicted with sexual assault. According to the trial, he gave a woman, induced a woman with chemicals in order to have sex with her. And that has, he had received a 10-year sentence, and he is now doing his time. But the incident and the whole scenario around his arrest and all of it happened has created a whole cloud of other things. And we haven't heard clearly from our own community on how they see that. We've listened to the community of the mainstream press and television, radio. They've talked about it. So we want to talk about it here then. So we're going to start off with our dear brother, Bill Cosby. And so the question that I want to put out there first, Ed, should we be here to bury Bill Cosby? Or should we praise him, as the Julius Caesar quote? How should we see our dear brother in terms of what the support we could offer in reference to his sentence and what he has done? There are a lot of questions about all of this and what might have happened, what might have happened. We really will never know that because we just won't have the privy to that kind of information. But again, as a community, what do we do? Do we vilify him, or do we support him? How do we do it? And I'm going to start with Dr. Belcher, because she is family therapist. You're a family therapist. You deal with this. We've had a couple of programs where you came on and you talked about this. So from the woman's perspective, what do you see when you see Bill Cosby?
Thank you. I was actually hoping to hear from some of the brothers first. But let me just say, as a woman, I support women who are coming forward with their truth about sexual assault. It's a very difficult thing for women who have been violated in any way to come forth publicly and to speak about that. And that it does take for some women to come forward years. Some women never. Other women right away. And the reason for that is because oftentimes when women come forward, particularly with regard to sexual assault, we're not believed. We're called liars. We're making that up. Or no, she wanted it. And all these kinds of things that we become vilified. And that's a re-victimization of us. So it's very challenging for women to come forward. And so we tend to press that stuff down. And because, you know, we don't want to be re-victimized. So we press it down and we don't come forward. And sometimes that looks like years. And for a lot of women walking around hurt, never come forward for those same reasons. Having said that, with regard to Bill Cosby,
There was some admission, I understand. I was not in the courtroom. I have not read all the transcripts from the court hearings. But I, from what I understand, there was some admission on his part that this happened. There was something I heard about that was the culture of the times, whatever. So there was some sense of, well, that happened during, admittedly, he said it happened, but it happened during that time. It was a culture of the time. But he's being tried in today's culture for something that was normalized back in that culture, allegedly. So I don't know. All I know is there was a trial, there was a hearing, there was testimony, there was some admission, and he's now serving time.
Okay. So what about the lack of the amount of time between when this incident occurred and when the woman came forth? Do you have any problems with that? Do you think that might, is there some issues from your perspective?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear the question because there was some background noise.
Oh, okay. Yeah, the mics are sensitive, folks, so we will be able to hear any noise that you might be doing. So, again, the question was the amount of time between when the lady came forward and made her confession about what he did and when it actually occurred. And also the fact of there was a momentum that was going on politically where all of the women were coming forward with people that had done all kinds of stuff. And so she's kind of maybe waited right until that time, many people say, to bring that up. Do you have
I think you're referencing the Me Too movement. The hashtag Me Too movement was a movement actually started by a black woman here in America, and it's kind of just got taken over by another culture. But it was actually started by a black woman here in America who began the Me Too movement and beginning to speak in their truth.
But what I think is important. I was going to say my question though is not so much about the Me Too movement, but about the time that she chose to come forward. It would appear that if he had drug her and committed this act against her back then, why didn't she support that then? Why didn't she report it then? Why wait until this momentum of a movement starts and then report it?
I'm not sure that it was only that it either was or only was the Me Too movement that helped to bring her forward. But if it did, it's helped to bring a lot of women forward to be able to speak their truth. And I think that's a good thing. As I said at the top of my comment, there's many reasons why women wait years and sometimes never come forward. And it's for fear. A lot of it is for fear of being re-victimized, not being believed, so on and so forth. We often have more to lose in coming forward than if we just remain silent.
Yeah, that's what I wanted you to get to, is that there may have been reasons why she didn't come forward, not necessarily a manipulation of politics, but just the fact that the way it affects people that are involved in that. Okay, all right.
Yeah.
One last question I want to ask you about that is what do you think is behind? We heard very little from Camille Cosby. As a matter of fact, she was not at his trial, at his sentencing, I don't think. She was not at his sentencing. And so what does that say in terms of family support? How do we look at that? And I'm not saying right or wrong on either way. I'm just asking you as a therapist, from the perspective of your work, how do we see that? How do we understand that? Because we are influenced by a lot of this.
Right. Well, I am an advocate. I'm not a licensed professional counselor, but I am an advocate, and I do work with families who have gone through sexual assault. One of the things you have to, and domestic violence and child abuse and so forth, I just label it family violence, okay? But in this case, we're specifically talking about people who are alleged and found to have been sexually assaulted by her husband. And what you have to understand, when there's this kind of victimization or abuse by a family member or within a family member, it impacts everybody. It's just like alcoholism. You know, it impacts the whole family. Okay. So this has had an impact on Camille Cosby. Mm-hmm. And how she's dealing with that privately, God only knows. Okay. But she is also likely to have been, well, definitely she's been traumatized by this.
Okay.
I stopped short of calling her a victim, but she's definitely been traumatized by what her husband has been accused of and now found guilty of and now not with her anymore.
Okay, all right.
And I certainly hope she gets some counseling.
Right. Okay, Brother White, let me ask you about some of the things that we had been hearing. First of all, Cosby was, his son was killed, some folks say by possibly the Russian mafia. And I don't know that for a fact. I'm just quoting gossip, which is probably not good to do. But I did hear that in the public realm. And also that there was a lot of things that came at him when he attempted to buy NBC. And so there were some issues around that. Again, it's not clear exactly what was it and who it was that was did not want him to purchase that television station, but I know he did attempt to do it and had talked about raising the money. So with that and looking at that and probably some other things that probably are there as well, could this have been a conspiracy?
One thing I like to say on the point you just made about Camille,
uh-huh.
Something that I found peculiar was with a person like Bill Cosby, who's had a 50-year career, and he was accused and he denied it, where was all his friends?
Mm-hmm.
Where was all his friends? Nobody showed up.
Okay.
They didn't. It's not to say, I'm showing up because we don't care what happened to her. He denied it, so at this point, as a friend, you support your friend, I would think. So that was just something I found, kind of interesting. But the other part, with what happened between Bill Cosby and the women that accused him, I wouldn't speculate because I don't know.
Okay.
Nobody knows.
Right.
But I know that white people, when they want something, they will use whatever they can at a particular time to get to the outcome that they want. Now, Bill Cosby was deemed to be America's dad.
Okay.
That would put him in a position of the highest elevation as America's dad to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And white supremacy has a problem with that, along with the other thing that you just talked about, the buying of the radio stations and things like that.
Right.
And what we know happened is, in the first trial, there was a deadlock jury. And so in the second trial, they allowed, I think, five other women come in and testify that he had did that to them, but their testimony was only hearsay.
Mm-hmm.
They saying it happened to them, but it hasn't been proven. So again, that's his word against theirs, and it hadn't been proven, but it was very damaging because they were going to get the outcome that they wanted.
Okay.
Whether something happened between him and the women, I can't say. I wouldn't attempt to make a judgment on that.
Okay.
But I do believe that Bill Cosby, in the demented mind of white supremacists, that he needed to be brought down. And this was the opportunity to do it.
Okay. All right. I think that you very clearly, you're right to see that. And that, and again, these are all surrounding circumstances, to the act. The act was, he raped women, and he did it by drugging them. Now, that's the bottom line. So there is no excuse for that. But there just appears to be some cloudy stuff. And I'm not saying that he didn't do what they said he did. I'm just saying that there are some cloudy issues that would truly impact the aggression at which, as you said, they came after him. For instance, when his son was killed, there was very little discussion. We didn't hear much about it afterwards. There may have been, but it just was kept into a quiet level. And then the NBC attempt, I know that was discussed in some areas, and there were some blockages to him, you know, about that. And then the other part that I think, again, I'm not making any excuses again either, but at that time, you know, you were talking about this was the era of the 70s, the late 60s. This was the Playboy Play Club. This was the rise of pornography. All of these crazy, deviant things that were going on in places like Los Angeles and New York. And I remember hearing a lot of entertainers' names came up about stuff. Sammy Davis Jr., his name was raised several times, and even his name was raised around the thing called snuff films, where women were being taken and they would videotape them in a pornographic way, and they were being killed, actually killed, because there were people that get sexual pleasure out of watching somebody be killed or snuffed out while they're having sex. So there was a whole lot of crazy stuff going on around that time. And how that fits into Cosby is that I think that there was a network, and I was wondering why some of those folks have not been brought into play. Obviously, Sammy Davis is deceased. When Hugh Hefner died, you know, it was a lot of quiet stuff that was being said. But Larry Flint, I understand, was involved in a lot of heavy stuff. So anyway, there's just a lot of strange stuff for him to have been singled out as the only one. I think they should have brought a whole bunch of them. Now, they got Harvey Weinstein, you know, but I, you know, to the effect, but he hadn't been gotten yet. He's still walking around. So anyway, it's just a real crazy issue. Let me go to Brother Oshie. Brother Oshie, you remember, and I know you know, Bill Cosby went around the country talking about black folks like a dog, talking about children, talking about our kids, pull up your pants, all kind of things he was saying about poor people and poverty. You know, I remember him coming to Milwaukee and at the Riverside, and he spoke to that occasion. How do you think that has anything to do with his arrest and him being brought to the light in the way that he was brought?
No, I don't. I think, and nor his him buying or trying to purchase NBC. I think what it is that, and what's ironic is the lady that had him prosecuted and then convicted, after the incident happened, supposedly they met many more times, and he helped get her through school, and there was a few million-dollar settlement. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of perplexing to me, but there were other women that he had done this to, but unfortunately for Bill Cosby, he admitted to doing it.
Right.
In fact, he's on Larry King's show talking about giving women Spanish fly, you know?
Yep.
So, you know, he basically admitted to what he did. And you know, we have to understand that this is a culture. European culture is a perverted culture. It's a rape culture. And that's why you've seen what happened going on with the Kavanaugh hearing. And I know we'll talk about that later. But because we're in the culture, we're caught up in it as well. Caught up in the homosexuality. We caught up in all the stuff that this culture presents.
That's right.
The dichotomy of it, you know. And so Bill Cosby admitted, and yes, I do remember. I remember him going to North Division High School in Milwaukee, you know, with that rhetoric.
Too.
And I was upset.
Yeah, I remember that too.
You remember that? Yeah.
I
do.
Yeah.
I was very upset about that.
Yeah. You know.
He kept saying, stop all these blaming white people.
Yeah. He never said anything about the perpetrators of the situation that we're in. He kept blaming us. Pull up your pants. Why are you naming your kids all these kind of names and this, that, and the other?
Yes, he did.
And so
you know, I had a fondness for Bill Cosby, like I feel like many of us did, particularly in the 60s. He was the first American African on television in a serious role.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in I Spy. All the other things he did, the stuff he did with children, all of these things, you know, his philanthropy, you know, all of that.
Right.
But the fact that that other side, and he admitted to doing it, and so therefore the penalty is what he received. I don't believe he's going to serve all of that time. After all, he's not a well man. He's 80-some years old, and he's legally blind,
right.
You know. But, and I don't think any of the other people that have been accused are going to go to trial. Harvey Weinstein, mm-hmm. Charlie Rose, no. You go down the line and name it.
Spacey.
You know.
Kevin.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But there are other perversions. I mean, in fact, this is ironic because I don't know if anybody can remember a football player for the Green Bay Packers, Darren Sharper.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Darren Sharper, handsome young man.
Yep.
I mean, very handsome young man. In fact, he played with New Orleans when New Orleans won the Super Bowl. And I think he played with Minnesota. But anyway, he was doing the same thing. He was drugging women and then having sex with them. Now, I mean, like, I don't know about y'all, but if I invited a woman and we're having dinner, and next thing she knows, she wakes up with her panties around her neck. I mean, like, what was the last thing you remember? Hanging out with Oshie having dinner. What happened after that? I don't know, but I woke up with my panties around my neck. Man.
Okay. Right.
You know? And so now he's serving, he's going to serve a lot more time. He was sentenced to a lot more time than Bill Cosby was.
Mm-hmm.
But he's been in jail now for both 5 years. But my point being that this is the kind of culture that we're in.
That's right.
And unfortunately, you know, Bill Cosby got caught up in it, just like you mentioned about the Playboy Club and all the other stuff that he was involved in. But also, too, you know, I mean, he made other things that he did well. But, I mean, he did a history piece that he did back in the late 70s or early 80s on our history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know?
Right.
I was just watching that the other day.
It's a good piece. You know?
Yeah.
But, you know, he admitted to doing it, and so he has to suffer the consequences, and it's unfortunate.
Right.
It is very unfortunate that, you know, he got caught up in that. But if you think about it, it is a culture. We live in a culture of drugs. There was a culture of drugs back then. And I remember one of his stanzas back in the 70s where he talked about giving women Quaaludes or something like that. And he made a joke out of it. And, you know, it was something that was acceptable at that time. You know, and to me, it seems very similar to how, you know, women are taking ecstasy and things like that.
Right.
So, you know, he's already admitted to doing it. He's doing the time. But my question is, you know, do we know whether or not it's consensual? You know, we don't know. We weren't there. But I could tell you that some of the women, some of the victims have financially benefited, as we talked about before. There's a couple of scholarships. There was some settlements outside of court and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't truly know the motive. All I know about Bill Cosby is he was the first father I ever had. You know, so I look at it from a different perspective. He was the one I looked up to and said, oh, I can be a doctor or I can be a lawyer. I don't have to live on 36th Street for the rest of my life. You know, I could really do something with my life. So his bad, in my opinion, does not take away from the good things that he's done. It's unfortunate. Absolutely. But, you know, it just seems like when you're Black and you're trying to do something and you're trying to bring people with you, something always happens to you.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's you know, I'm thinking about Malcolm X. I'm thinking about Kaepernick. I'm thinking about all the Black Panthers. You know, I'm thinking about anyone who tried to make some sort of difference. And his message was not right, you know, about how we can't talk and things like that. But
right.
I understood what he was trying to say. He just didn't have the right way of saying it.
The way of saying it. Yeah, that's right. Brother Cozy, let me ask you, because you are the younger voice on the panel. What do you think the impact of his arrest and us being inundated with all of this activity for the last 2 or 3 months with him? And this, I think he's the first high visibility African American that has had to endure this. What do you think that's going to leave any impact on the community in a negative way? How is that going to, you think, affect the thinking, or will it have any effect at all? What is your opinion on that?
I think there's an effect. I think you'll have more of an impact maybe in the 90s, you know, with, you know, a different world and, you know, the Bill Cosby show on TV and things like that. But, you know, I think the impact is still significant because a lot of people know his contributions. I mean, he's given hundreds of million dollars in scholarships. Everyone knows that.
Right.
I mean, you know, Temple alone, he's given, you know, $50 million, and they disassociated themselves with him in a second, in a millisecond. You know, didn't give any of that money back, but they completely.
That's right. Didn't get any of that money back, did they?
Didn't get any money back. No, they didn't. But they definitely cut ties and took his doctorate. Took the honorary doctorates and everything.
Right. All of that, yep.
So to me, it has an impact on me, speaking from the younger generation. I think that the millennial generation maybe don't care as much, but it's that negative image of a black man that bothers me the most, because if they're not talking about Trump, they're talking about Bill Cosby, but they're not talking about Harvey Weinstein. They're not talking about Kevin Spacey and all these other people that have done pretty significant crimes, in my opinion.
Exactly.
In some cases, worse, because in Weinstein's case, these individuals were sober and he was forcing himself on them.
Right.
And it was documented for over 25 years, mm-hmm. you know, and no one did absolutely anything with that information. And to this day, he's free and still a millionaire, still has all his money.
Right.
So, you know, to me, it's a double standard. Our justice system is not fair. I'll be the first to say that on this panel. It's set up for us to fail. And he took the bait. I think there was some narcissism involved. I think that he probably got too big, and, you know, it's a power trip. But, you know, sometimes when we get to a certain level, we feel like we're untouchable. And maybe he at some point thought he was untouchable.
I would agree with that. I think because of his fame and his fortune from the 60s moving forward, that he forgot that he was a black man.
Yes.
Because at the end of the day, I don't care how much money you make and how much whatever, you step 1 millisecond out of line, 1/4 inch over the line, and you will be quickly reminded that are a black man.
Absolutely. They tried to do it to Obama the entire time.
Thank you. And he was the president of the United States.
Yeah.
So I think Bill forgot.
He forgot.
You know, he forgot. He was black and it does matter.
Exactly.
That it does matter.
That leads us to the next area is Judge Brett Kavanaugh. But before we do, I just want to let our listening audience know that you're listening to the Black Reality Think Tank. We are here every Tuesday evening from 8 p.m. To 10 p.m. Eastern Time. We are talking with a wonderful panel of four community activists and political thinkers. And we are just looking at some of the roundup, some of the things that have been going on in our world over the last 2 to 3 months, and we are talking about them. We've just completed an analysis of the Bill Cosby incident and what impact that might have on our community. Now, that also, which is involving a sexual situation, also leads us into the Brett Kavanaugh. But I want to start this question off, because one of the things that I did in preparation for today's program is I went back and I looked at the Clarence Thomas situation. And in terms of the politics of this case and the Clarence Thomas politics, it's the identical same thing. The only difference is that the victim was a black woman and Kavanaugh's is a white woman. But the attitude, the whole idea of the Republican Party and what they were doing to protect that candidate, as you know, he was nominated by George Bush Senior, and he was embraced by Strom Thurmond. I remember when he walked in the court, he was hugging Clarence Thomas as he walked in the court. So the question I want to then ask, and I'm gonna go to Brother Oshie on this one, Brother Oshie, how do you see the difference between, other than the fact that Anita Hill was a black woman and the victim in the Kavanaugh case was a white woman, what do you see about these two cases? Because they're very similar. I mean, extremely very similar in a lot of ways. How do you see that?
Well, the only thing, like you said, the difference is that Anita Hill and Clarence Thomas, being who they are, Kavanaugh and Dr. Ford being who they are, mm-hmm. and of course, in a racist and systemically racist and institutional racism that it happens in a society, they're completely different in that respect.
Right.
And also, too, Clarence Thomas, you know, being who he is, the sellout, the Negro that he is, you know, was clearly embraced, and ironically, the same men, the same senators that dealt with that situation, Grassley, all of them, the same people dealt with the one that just happened. They, you know, they're the same people, and they still handled it pretty much the same way because, once again, you know, white privilege and Collins. From Maine, even though she felt a certain way, and she felt that Dr. Ford was correct in what happened, and she, you know, felt that she was saying the truth, she just didn't want to believe that Kavanaugh did it. And clearly, to me, he did it. There was evidence to prove that he did it. The whole thing was a sham.
Okay,
it was.
I agree.
It was a sham. And they needed to get Kavanaugh in, Trump did, because of how he has voted or how he has dealt with cases. Number one, he doesn't believe that the president should be accused, tried, or anything like that during the president's reign or his presidency. He also, there is a case coming up dealing with pardon. That if a president pardons an individual, that individual is totally pardoned. There is no other jurisdiction that can come after that person for what they have done, even if there was the law says that they could. So basically, if you are, you know, they're going to clean the slate on you, you know?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So they needed to get him in. And how it happened and how it looked was just, reality is that this country is about European, Caucasian, extremism, racism, and privilege.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And the privilege that Caucasian men have, that's why he could, if there was a brother who behaved and did what Kavanaugh did, when he was confronted with what he had done, and I believe he did it,
mm-hmm.
and behaved like that, automatically, you know, he would have been, no, he's unsent. He doesn't have the temperament to be a Supreme Court justice.
Correct.
You said it exactly.
Yeah. But because...
And he doesn't.
No, he doesn't. But because of who he is and the fact that Trump looked at him and how he has ruled previously, they wanted him. They want to put him in there. And the fact that position is now closed up for the next 20-plus years, at least,
right.
That the court has a conservative 5-4 majority for the next 20. I don't know how long Ruth Bader Ginsburg has to hang on.
She's 85.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, you know, regardless, I believe that he did it. I believe that he gets drunk to such degree. And you've seen how he behaved. He supposedly had behaved when he's drunk, even more enraged.
Right. Exactly.
And you see how he behaved when he wasn't drunk. And then, of course, accusing the Democrats and accusing Hillary Clinton and a number of other things that this man has said while he was in that fit of rage.
Yeah, exactly.
Because his privilege is being challenged.
Mm-hmm. And what was the deal about so, that he kept putting his tongue in his jaw? You remember, did you watch him as he was talking? He kept sticking his tongue in his jaw. I mean, I'd say, what is that? I was like a kid. A kid does that kind of thing when he gets in trouble and he's nervous. He starts sticking his tongue and doing all kind of stuff, you know, because he's getting ready.
He can't control his temper. That's white privilege.
He can't control himself. That's
you were looking at the face of white privilege, and white privilege does not like being confronted, and he does not like being confronted.
Now, he'd known that millions of people are watching him, but yet he got so nervous that he was sticking his tongue in his jaws and he's doing all kind of stuff. And I said, what is wrong with this guy? You know, so you're right. He couldn't control. That's very clear indication of that.
Y'all are saying that he doesn't have the temperament. I disagree.
Okay.
He does have the temperament to serve on the Supreme Court.
Okay.
He has to uphold the legacy of the 1854 Supreme Court, Roger Taney. He's perfect for the Supreme Court.
Yeah,
what's the original intent
under
of the Supreme
Trump regime.
Court, of the Congress, of the Senate, of the presidency?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
A bunch of sick people.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, he fits perfectly on there. It don't matter what Supreme Court you're talking about. It's all going to be the same.
Right.
Baba, when you
it's all going to be the same.
Right.
Baba, when you mentioned your initial question about the what are the similarities between Bill Cosby and Clarence Thomas,
right?
And which led us on to talking a little bit more about Kavanaugh, we're probably going to talk
about
in a minute.
No, I didn't say Bill Cosby. It's Kavanaugh and Clarence Thomas.
Between Kavanaugh and Clarence. I thought it was Kavanaugh and Clarence.
Uh-huh, right, exactly. Let me ask you, Dr. Okay. Bill, does this decision to go forward and ratify Kavanaugh and the decision to go forward and ratify Clarence Thomas, even in the midst of all that was said and the way in which it was presented, what message from your perspective as a female does that send to the women of America? Or if it does it send a message? How do you see that?
Well, I think it sends a message to America at large, it rubber stamps what men have been saying and what we women know is that our word means absolutely nothing. You know, when we come forward, so what? It's kind of like the Me Too movement is saying, you know, you got woman after woman after woman all across this country, millions of us who've come forward and said, hey, Me Too. And you now got a Senate and now a Supreme Court justice saying, so what? Me Too. We don't care. You know, the challenge before us as women, and particularly as sexual assault advocates like myself, family violence advocates, is to say, no, we will win. And I'm going to tell you how we're going to make this level out to the best degree we can. For every person on that Senate who voted for Kavanaugh, we're voting against you. You will lose your seat for giving him his. And women are very powerful and very powerful at the vote. And along with the men allies who support us in this, because every man that's on the face of this earth came out of a woman. And you should stand for women and with women against this kind of behavior if for no other reason than for your own mother.
Well, let me say this, sister, because I understand what you're saying and I understand the logic of it. But we're in a society, in a culture that is illogical. This is very, you have to understand the history of the development of Europeans, of how they came into being and how that culture developed. It's very hardcore patriarchal, very male dominating. That's why you've seen over 55 or something percent of the women who voted in the presidential election voted Caucasian women.
I was going to say, let's clarify that. It was Caucasian because they voted for Trump. It was not a black.
They voted for Trump.
It was 51%, but it was Caucasian.
Well, let me just say this. If you understand that, whatever the percentage were, it was a high percentage. It put him over the top. Number one, because Hillary Clinton was a flawed, deeply flawed candidate, but be that as it is, the fact that he also admitted doing some things against women. He He's on record doing things against women. I mean, Donald Trump is probably the least qualified presidential candidate in history, in memory,
of
for
course.
Sure. Number one, he never had a political background, or at least in campaign or election politics, you know.
Right.
And well, I think I just want to clarify that vote thing. It was about 51% of white women who voted for Trump, but that isn't what got him in the office on its own. The other piece of what got him in the office was the non-vote and split vote. We had a split situation with regard to Hillary Clinton and Bernie, and so we had a lot of people who didn't vote at all because of that. We had a lot of minority vote that didn't vote at all. So for every non-vote is a vote for Donald Trump. So it wasn't just that 51%.
I don't agree with every non-vote because I'm a non-voter. I've never voted for a candidate in my life.
Wow. Okay.
So, I've never.
So
I've never
like,
okay. Okay. But.
Oh my
but
God.
I think the bottom line is once again what I stated about the culture itself. That you can say these things openly. You and I both know that Barack Obama said or done anything of that nature would have totally disqualified him as a presidential nominee. If he would have behaved the way Trump behaved in the debates with Hillary Clinton, he was very careful to respect Hillary Clinton
was.
In those debates.
Yes, he was.
Yeah, he did.
Well, because for A, he's not a narcissist, and he's a gentleman.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
he gave her more respect.
Well, not only that, because of him, but because of how this country would have looked at him. You see?
And he's just not that guy. I mean, and yes, you're right. You're absolutely right, but he's just not that guy. He's a gentleman. He's not a narcissist, and I'm just going to call it what it is, like our current president, and he knows how to respect women. Our prior president, number 44. So that's just the way it is. So, and I'm sure also the fact that he was a man of African descent also
right.
helped him to understand that, you know, all eyes on me, you know, as Tupac
right, because
would say.
You can't cross those lines.
Correct.
Trump can do whatever
but I don't think
he wants to do. Trump can do everything else. He even said it himself, I could shoot somebody on in Times Square and you fools will still vote for me.
Yeah.
And what's scary is I think he's right.
Yeah. That's what I said. Yeah.
And also, too, the women will vote for him. Because in white supremacy, that women love the privilege that they have access to.
Absolutely.
They love that privilege that they have access to. That's why Colin from Maine voted for his nomination. Where Murawski from Alaska didn't. Well, I read something recently about Alaska. Right. Alaska is one of the top states for women being sexually assaulted. So she probably understood that, yeah, I believe he did do this. This does happen a lot.
Yeah,
I can't in good conscience, now that somebody is coming forward and others are coming forward, I in good conscience cannot vote for him, although I am a Republican.
I think you're right. I think you're right about the white privilege. I think Maya Angelou called what white women have done since slavery was sit back in what she called their pink slavery. In other words, you know, you sat back and you were put on this pedestal and you enjoyed your pink slavery. And it, which meant as white women, you benefited from the fact that your husband enslaved all these people and God knows what else with these black women. And you benefited from it.
Right,
and to this day, I mean, they stood for their white men. Then they're going to stand for them today because they're still their men,
right.
And they are going to stand.
And plus, they were benefiting from the plantation. They didn't have
correct.
To work, or they stayed home and played cards and drank mint julep, so they can have to do it.
In their pink slavery. Yes.
Let me do this.
When you saw Donald Trump standing up mocking Dr. Ford at that rally. And
the reporters
behind him was clapping and laughing.
That's a shame.
Those are the same people you see in them photographs where black men were being lynched and they were standing there smiling and laughing.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. The exact same mentality.
It's the same spirit. That's yes. Right. That spirit has not left that culture.
Yeah. It's never going anywhere. Okay. Let me take a quick break, and I want to open up the lines for our callers. We have several callers on, and I want to give them an opportunity to either ask a question or make a comment. You're listening to the Black Reality Think Tank. As you know, we are here every Tuesday evening from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, and we are here also on the Blog Talk system on Saturday from 4 to 6 p.m. as well. So we definitely want to have you to continue to listen. And remember our archive system. You can go and listen to any of the programs in the past on our archive system as well. So I want to just quickly take a break, a quick musical break, and then we're going to come right back. And we're going to open up our lines so that our guests can say some things.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
If man is the father, the sun is the center of the earth, in the middle of the universe, then why is this verse coming six times rehearsed? Don't freestyle much, but I write them like such.
Word.
Amongst the fiends controlled by the screens, what does it all mean, all this I'm seeing? Human beings screaming vocal javelins, sign of a local unraveling.
Uh-huh.
My wandering got my wondering, where Christ is in all this crisis. Hating Satan never knew what nice is. Check the papers, well, I bet on ISIS. More than your eye can see and ears can hear. Year by year, all the sense disappears. Nonsense perseveres, prayers laced with fear. Beware, two triple O's.
It might feel good, it might sound a little something. But damn the game, if it don't mean nothing. What is game? Who got game? Where's the game in life? Behind the game, behind the game. I got game, she got game. We got game, they got game. He got game. It might feel good, it might sound a little something. But the game, if it ain't saying nothing.
Damn, was it something I said? Pretend you don't see, so you turn your head. Race scared of his shadow, does it matter? Thought of reparations, got a plan with the population. Nothing to lose, everything's approved. People use, even murder's excused. White men in suits don't have to jump. Still 1,001 ways to lose with the shoes. God takes care of old folks and fools, while the devil takes care of making all the rules. Folks don't even own themselves, paying mental rent. The corporate presidents. One out of 1 million residents. Be a dissident who ain't kissing it. The politics are chains and whips. Got the sick missing chips and all the championships. What's love got to do with what you got? Don't let a win get to your head or a loss to your heart. Nonsense perseveres, prayers laced with fear. Beware, two triple O is
it might
near.
Feel good, it might sound a little something. But damn the game, if it don't mean nothing. What is game? Who got game? Where's the game in life? Behind the game, behind the game. I got game, she got game. We got game, they got game. He got game. It might feel good, it might sound a little something. But the game, if it ain't saying nothing.
Something happening, yeah. What it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there. Telling me I got to beware. It's time we stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
Of that millennium just be killing them. And that's scary, like lies buried in a library. When did a state pen correct anything? When piles of us still be catching the bus. When stacks of cats packing laundry mats. Pay the preachers back, but where the teachers at? I ain't even gotta ask it. And who's underpaid that got fouled at the basket? I can't blame the envy at who be getting all the Benjis and taking them grants for granted. Last I checked, pyramids wasn't built like projects or in them government checks. Modern day thugs ain't got no guts. Pardon the expression under governor nuts. Last time in the church be the last time in the church. Dead pledged allegiance to CDs and movies.
Leaving reality, believing fantasy. Bleeding fatalities, too many formalities. Prayers laced with fear, beware. 2000 is here.
It might feel good, it might sound a little something, but damn the game, if it don't mean nothing. What is game? Who got game? Where's the game in life? Behind the game, I got game, she got game, we got game, they got game, he got game. It might feel good, it might sound a little something, but the game, if it ain't saying nothing.
Yes, Public Enemy says everybody's got game. Everybody's got game. We are here. We are discussing our fall roundup here at the Black Reality Think Tank, looking at a lot of the recent issues that have occurred in our time and space here, and just kind of critiquing, giving our thoughts on what we think we see. And obviously that, you know, we don't have all of the answers, but we definitely can comment on what we see and hope we can help somebody in knowing how to plan and prepare and build agendas for change, and that's what we're doing. This is the Black Reality Think Tank, and we're here every Tuesday from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Also, we have another very dynamic program that airs on Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays. And that program comes on at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, and it lasts to 1 p.m. Eastern Time every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And it's called African Perspectives. And it hosts by one of our guests that's on here tonight, Brother Oshiemi Adelabu. Very dynamic program, same type of format that we do. Get at the issues, explore, critique, and just try to make sense of what to do so that we can come up with a solution. Come up with a way to address that in our community. And he's had very dynamic guests, very dynamic individuals and topics to deal with as well. So we really appreciate that. It's called African Perspectives every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. You can access it by going to www.timeforanawakening.com or either call, as some have done here, area code 215-490-9832. And you can voice your opinion or ask questions as well. Also, there are other great programs that that also air on the Time for Awakening Network. And I don't have a full list of what they are, but I can just kind of briefly. Brother Oshie's on here. He knows what they are. If you want to tell our audience, Brother Oshie, what some of those programs are, that'd be great.
Sure. Okay, Doc. Yeah, on Mondays, Acres of Diamonds, all times are going to give at Eastern Time. On Mondays, Acres of Diamonds is from 6 to 8. That's a public affairs programming out of Philadelphia. Right after that is Let's Buy Black 365, which is from 8 to 9, Let's Buy Black 365. Then, of course, your program here on Tuesday evenings from 8 to 10, Black Reality Think Tank. And then on Wednesdays is Revive with Sister POC, young millennial sister, POC Proof of Consciousness, and she's from 8 to 10 on Wednesdays. And then on Fridays, Time for an Awakening from 8 until about 10 and 11. Time for West, that's Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And then on Saturdays, it's Sports Talk, Saturday Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore from 10 to 12. Then on Sundays, from 11 to one, it's a POC, Sister POC again. Her program is Revive. And then Sunday evenings at 7 o'clock, 7 p.m. Eastern, it's Time for an Awakening. And those are the programs presently on the Time for an Awakening media.
Right. Thank you, Brother Oshie. And by all means, to our listening audience, visit the website at www.timeforanawakening.com, and you just see some of the programs that have aired in the past and some of the discussions and the formats in which we have taken here on this network. Very dynamic work network to be on, and so I'm happy that the Black Reality Think Tank can be a part of that. Okay, we want to get right back into our discussion. We are looking at that, and so we're going to open up the lines a minute and see if there are some of our guests. We have Brother Griffin my good friend out of Newport News, Virginia. He is here with us. And so, Brother Griffin, what do you think? Bill Cosby, Kavanaugh, how do we look at all that from your perspective? Brother Griffin? Oh, wait a minute, you might not be on here. Okay.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, I'm sorry. I was trying to say good evening to your esteemed guest. Okay. I don't want to stay long. I try to be concise to get in and get out.
Okay.
Cosby, I think, hung himself because if you get into particulars, he did settle a case and then went into court again later and ended up running his mouth rather than letting his lawyer talk, and he admitted to drugging that lady. So I understand white supremacy. I'm 65 years old, born and raised in Yorktown, Virginia. Nobody can convince me it's not real. But I also wanted to say, so with his pound cake speech and his whole respectability politics, he's a victim of what I've seen a lot of successful black people do. They think they can run from blackness because they're accepted or tolerated by white people. Mm-hmm. I personally think that the problem with us, especially since 1964, is we confuse assimilation and integration. I won't get into a lot of detail about it. I'll just put it out there. Maybe we can talk about it in another program. But I also think terminology is important. I don't agree that Kavanaugh has the right temperament because there's a lot of difference between temperament and ideology. I do agree with the gentleman who said he is in line with Taney from 1854, because we have to understand what that document does. And the easiest way I can tell you is I consistently push a hashtag called Abe's Big Lie, because 14 words in the 13th Amendment define the legality of slavery. It never abolished slavery. Okay. I don't care where you went to school. If you can deconstruct 47 words of Section 1 of the 13th Amendment, you can figure out slavery was never abolished. It was defined how slavery could be used legally. And that's 14 words, and it says something to the effect, except for whereby the parties have been duly convicted of a crime, slavery and indentured servitude is legal. The other thing I wanted to talk about is we could put out some numbers. The most reliable source I found in November, directly after the elections, and what I've seen since then, is we confuse a lot of things. Mm-hmm. Of when it comes to white females without a college education were the primary ones that pushed Trump over, because in that group of uneducated or no degreed white women, 62% of them voted for Trump. Where during Obama's election, he got somewhere around 54 to 57% of those without a college education. Mm-hmm. When it comes to white females with a college education, 45% voted for Trump, 51% voted for Clinton, 4% didn't cast a vote for either of them. So when we hear this stuff that we hear all the time that really infuriates me about black people let people down by not showing up during 2016, that's really not the case. And then the other part is we don't even look at how voter suppression, voter check, all of that stuff affected targeted areas that the GOP used to make sure that they would win, not necessarily the popular vote, because their samples showed they couldn't win that, but they knew exactly how to play the Electoral College. So all I can say is, we need to get together as a people and stop bickering over some things that really don't count, because everything that's happened to us is long range. I don't fall for the idea that Trump is doing all of this, because I was wide awake when the entire Obama administration, we failed to hold that man accountable. When we talk about what people did to him because of his color, the truth is, most of what Obama did, he did willingly. And it was evident when he chose Summers, Geithner, and Rubin as the three main people to head his cabinet, and they were picked by Citicorp. So if you don't believe me, Google the Cooper Union speech, and you will find out that he was in public telling us he was going to protect the homeowners and do something about the bankers. And he went before them in a historic meeting representing several other historic events. And he told them, I'm all that stands between you and the pitchforks. I'm here to help you. So I give no quarter to Barack Obama. And I will say this on air, too. The problem with Barack Obama is the problem we have with most of our people. We go by skin color rather than what their purpose is. I have the same disdain for Lewis, Clyburn, and even Maxine. Because if you're not mentoring people to replace you, and you know you're human and leaving this earth, you're not for your people.
Okay.
I agree.
I love it.
Symbolism without substance. I agree.
Brother Timothy from Philadelphia, how you doing today, my brother?
Good, my brother. Listen, I'm happy to see you back,
thank
Dr. Rogers.
I'm glad to be back.
Yes,
too.
You have Brother Oshie, and you have different people on your panel who you always bring people, man, who know what they're talking about.
Yes.
And are skilled at what they do. I'm going to say this, sir, that Cogs from Philadelphia, and he's somebody that I knew. And, you know, I grew up with a black and white television. I was born in 61. And when it came on color, there were two people that I admired as a young man. That was Greg Mars and Bill Cosby. Greg Mars, Mission Impossible, Bill Cosby, is our
star. That's right.
And
right there in your hometown, right in Philadelphia.
He went to a school called, he went to Central High School.
Mm-hmm.
He was kicked out of Central, and he graduated from Germantown. Mm-hmm. And he grew up in the projects in North Philadelphia. And he's important to a lot of Philadelphians because of that. And to Lincoln University, it was enough for him to travel there, tell a few jokes to the alumni during homecoming and the student body, and drop off a couple bucks. So we missed that. I mean, you know, when HBCUs are complaining about him giving them money, well, Lincoln didn't complain at all. Matter of fact, we wish he would have shoved some of it down Cheney because they're trying to close Cheney University. That's one aspect of Bill Cosby,
right.
You know. But the other aspect of Bill Cosby, we were hurt in Philadelphia because, you know, to go around, man, I don't want to see anybody rape, male or female, and to go around putting hallucinogenics in people's drinks. I mean, come on, that's some uncalled for stuff. Now, if he was getting high with her or them, that's something different, and it's definitely wrong to abuse someone, to put somebody in a state like that. The other thing is that this woman who was from Temple University, who he met, he meets her, I don't know what her intentions were, but whatever his intentions were, they could have took care of business in the office. She winds up at his house. Okay, it goes on further, and I don't know if these women want to play loose, if they were into that. Whatever it is, you can't go around drugging women and raping them. That's wrong. But he settled with this woman, and I think she got over $3.5 million, at least close to that. Now, he settled with these women, and the settlement was, and he admitted doing this. See, all of us understand he admitted doing these things. His attorney that he has, very interesting. Now, I'm not saying that what he did was right. His attorney let him say he did that. If he did that, then that was wrong for doing that. But what kind of attorney did he have?
Mm-hmm.
The other thing, sir, is that now we take it to this point that it went into the settlement. If you settle with somebody, I thought the case was over with. So this woman, who's also from Philadelphia, who went to girls' high school, she had an in for him, okay? And she haunted him down. She chased him down. See, I don't know when it comes to black people, African-American men and women, that when you make a certain amount of money being black, people are after you. I never had money like that. I don't have $400,000. He's worth $400,000. Okay? That's money that he earned. Him and Camille. And people don't like that kind of money. And what you do with it, what he was doing was, when it came to production, when he did the Cosby Kids, that was production and sales. When he did the Cosby Family, that was production and sales.
Right.
He amassed this money that he earned. And dealing with, you know, I can't tell people who to date. But brothers need to leave the white women alone. That's one thing. This all this Kanye West, he with that white woman, Joe Jay with that white woman. It's a heat zone. Okay, leave that alone and stick with your own culture and kind and move on with it. Now I'm going to the situation with he's in jail now, and he's in a jail where some of my friends have been in and out of. It was once called Holmesburg, it's now called Phoenix.
Okay.
Now they got a kick out of letting them come out of courtroom shackles. They repeated that in Philadelphia television for a whole week, and those women. I have a friend of mine who's an attorney. That woman had a party that same day. They said they were partying, man, jumping around having fun because they got Cosby. Now I'm going to get into, I looked at what Brother Oshie said when he said that, where's his friends and the psychiatrist that you have with you on the panel? In other words, it was his wife. I said, man, where's Sidney Poitier at? Where's Kelly Belafonte at? That hit me too. The other thing is, did they know Bill was doing this through the years and stayed away from him? They don't want their name tarnished. And when it comes to Camille, she spoke out against what happened to her husband being railroaded in a kangaroo court. Right. I know that. But why she wasn't there, I don't know if she couldn't take it. But I believe she's going through a lot. This is my opinion. And I'm going to say that I think, I hope at 81 years old is remedied by him doing less time. But I think they're going to give him three. I think it's going to be hard. They're working on it, but they're getting the kick out of, oh, here's a man who became a PhD and he became a millionaire. And look how we get him high and low with degrees, non-degrees, trades people, business people. So that was an example of this is our country, and we do what we want to do. The other thing is that let's look at it. Let's look at it like this. Let's look at Trump. Let's look at Trump. And I'll say this to you. Look at his behavior. Look how he is. But his wife, so far, sticking with him. They're used to the man going all the way back to slavery, chattel slavery, going and beating Dr. Rogers, me and you, Brother Oshie, and any other male on here, and turn around and beat the woman and have her come to his quarters, and he go back to where he lives at, and he sees the white woman, and the white woman says, well, that's my husband. She ain't leaving him. Yeah, she ain't leaving him. Right. Now, getting into Kavanaugh and Dr. Ford. Now, he looks at one time I saw Trump saying, oh, wow, he's drinking? Oh, I never drank. He's probably lying. Oh, I don't know if I could have that. At one time he said that. You know what he did? He went back to his cabinet, and they said, fearless leader, get to your guns.
Right.
We taking them, ain't we? He went back to the public, and he wanted that. Now he wants them. Now I don't think he's really wrestled it too tough. But the other thing is that I felt sorry for her because they were both playing, and she's a victim of therapy. I think she became a therapist. I want to talk to the therapist you have on the panel right now. She had that experience of rape.
Brother Timmons,
she was fighting.
Brother Timothy.
She became what she was fighting, a therapist, a psychologist. And you know what? They turned around and made her guilty. You saw Trump on the television with his new appointee. Oh, we owe you an apology. And he threw that woman down the hole. Like, oh, she a mess. She had all kinds of holes in her presentation. I thought she did an excellent job of telling you what the experience was. He acted like this. He started off right when he talked about how his daughter was affected by Dr. Ford. Then he went off and they asked him a question about alcohol. He asked a woman a question with a question. I said, this guy, he is not qualified.
Well, Brother Timothy, like I got to cut
said,
you off. Brother
like
Timothy.
He said, I'm from Brother Yale, Timothy. I worked hard. That's that white privilege. And white privilege.
Brother Timothy, I've got to cut you off. We've got about 30 minutes left. I do have somebody else on the line that I need to talk to. I don't know if they wanted to say something, but we have the young producer that does the Thursday program on the Black Reality Think Tank. Her name is Shannon B. I don't know, Miss Shannon, you want to say some words or are you just listening? Shannon B., are you there?
Have my mic on?
Shannon B.,
oh, yeah.
Are you there?
Hey, Dr. Rogers.
Okay.
Yeah, Lafayette, everybody. I'm just listening. I'm enjoying the conversation. So, no, I don't have anything to say. This is great dialogue. I'm here for the show.
Okay. Well, good. I appreciate that. We look forward to your next production coming up in 2 weeks. So we really are excited about what you're doing. And Lady V, we're excited about what she's doing as well. So thank you so much for calling in. I just wanted to check. I wanted to make sure you didn't want to say something. Okay, let me go back to a question that we wanted to kind of move from the Clarence Thomas Kavanaugh situation. Brother Oshi, let me ask you, very soon you and I will have an opportunity to vote for the first black woman governor of Georgia, Stacey Adams. What's Stacey's last name?
Abrams.
Stacey Abrams.
Right.
Is she ready for the governorship? Is she going to be able to handle this white supremacist that she's running against, who sits in his commercials with a shotgun on?
There's no doubt that she is. Okay. She's been a groomed politician based upon what I have gathered, the information I've gathered, because I really haven't heard of her. Because, you know, I'm new to the area, only been here a few years. So, you know, I don't really know who's who. But based upon those who I've talked to, although there is one radio, talk radio here, 1380 WAOK, one of the presenters is not going to vote for her because of some things that she got involved in, things that she's done. And when he was about to elaborate on it, I didn't get a chance to really hear it because I had to do something. So I was listening to it in the car. I really wanted to hear what he had to say.
Okay.
You know, or why.
Who was this
he's
individual?
Not going to support Stacey Abrams.
Who was
but
this
he
individual?
He is getting huge support, as is the Republican candidate. You know, they have term limits here. And so the governor had to give it up, just like the mayor has to give it up after two terms.
Right.
You know, and I'm for term limits. I would definitely be for term limits for the Senate, those old bastards that are in there, and congressmen. To me, there are people who have been in Congress for 30, 40, 50 damn years and really ain't done a damn thing. So, but anyway, I think that, yes, she is. She's been groomed for it. She has lots of support, lots of national support. She's raised tens of millions of dollars for this campaign. Her commercials have been running since September.
Yeah, pretty aggressive,
early,
too.
Late in August.
Very aggressive advertisement. I like that. She's really attacked him. She's attacked him on several levels.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he deserves to be attacked.
No doubt about it.
One of the good old boy Southern kind of cat, with the Southern drawl and everything in his commercials early on. I was like, wow, because there's one commercial when he was with the Republican challenger, and he won it because he got the endorsement of Donald Trump. But here he is holding a shotgun on a teenager. You know?
Yeah, that's really about. I couldn't believe that.
Yeah, well, I mean, hey, we are where we are down here. That's possible. But, you know, I think, though, that, yes, she could win it. It would be monumental, you know, just like the brother in Florida and his campaign. You know, he's been the mayor of Tallahassee, Florida, the state's capital, for a good number of years. And the previous governor is now running for the U.S. Senate, and he's a supporter of Donald Trump as well as the other Republican guys, the reporter of Donald Trump.
Right.
You know.
Okay.
I don't know, Doc.
Okay. I hear you.
Well, it remains to be seen. I think it's very close to call. In fact, she is leading in the poll by a couple of percentage points, right, which, of course, has a plus-minus 5% either way. So,
okay,
very close to call.
Brother Nkosi, you got a brother that's running for lieutenant governor with the superintendent of the Department of Public Instructions. You know, how does that look Well, Wisconsin, what's going on there? What do you feel? What are your thoughts?
You know, it's really tough to call. You know, he's got a good campaign going right now, and you know, it's a grassroots campaign. There's a lot of people behind them. There's a lot of support, but you never know. That, you know, they're redrawing the district lines and things like that. So, you know, I really do think that plays a bigger part into who wins these elections than we even realize. And that's why with Kavanaugh, you know, getting selected for the Supreme Court, there's a case going up against the Supreme Court where they're talking about the lines, Republican drawn lines, that helps them win elections. So once that's up, and they vote for that, you know, it's going to be really hard for any Democratic nominee to win going forward, particularly here in Wisconsin.
Okay. Brother White, from a bare knuckle position, just gut level, bottom line, does any of this stuff really matter, the governors and mayors? And I mean, because when you look historically at stuff, you know, it's very hard picking out, you know, the gains. I mean, I'm sure there have been some gains. But just from a, like I said, bad knuckle, gut feeling, how much do we need to pay attention to this other than just getting out voting? What how do you feel? How do you see that?
Well, it's like you have two teams, like the Dodgers and the Yankees, bitter rivals. And the Dodgers hate the Yankees, and the Yankees hate the Dodgers, and they're always rivals.
Right.
But if one of the players on the Dodgers get a better offer from the Yankees, he'll go to the Yankees, because it ain't about Dodgers and Yankees. The name of the game is baseball.
Right.
And they all play baseball. And so there's no difference between Republicans and Democrats. They're all white supremacists.
Okay.
No difference in either one of them. It's a game that they play to make you think that you have choices.
That's right. I agree. Mm-hmm. In fact, I like to say this is just a different wing of the same nasty, filthy bird is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
You got a choice between a hyena and a buzzard. One will eat you alive and one will swallow you whole when you're dead.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Dr. Belcher, how you see it?
Well, I look at it through this lens. There are too many of our ancestors who died for my right, our right to vote.
Okay.
They saw some value in the vote. They were willing to put their lives on the line for it, and more than we could ever count died for it. And we always talk about honoring our ancestors at the beginning of our programs on radio or beginning of before we speak and all these things, as we should. But when it comes to honoring our ancestors who literally gave their lives for our right to vote so that their kids and their kids' kids' kids could vote, and we don't vote and we speak against the vote, I think that's a dishonorment to our ancestors.
Okay.
I hate to say this, sister, but I beg to differ with that. I really do.
I knew you would, but I had to say it anyway.
I'm ready for it.
Go ahead, Oshie.
When you look at us voting in this messed up system, now, if you want to count a 64 Civil Rights Act, a 65 Voting Rights Act, a this, that, and the other, there has really been no true impact on our lives because of voting. This is a messed up, flawed system, the system itself, and it is not going to change because too many people benefit from the system being the way it is. So it doesn't matter. When I said some years ago in 08, I said, if voting for Barack Hussein Obama, if there is a difference in our lives, incrementally, not monumentally, in a small measure, less mass incarceration, less miseducation, health, and all these other issues that affect our people that are more profound in us than anybody else, if in a small measure, then voting for Barack Obama was the thing for us to do. I gave money and I voted for him.
I saw what happened. I didn't give him a damn dime the next time, and I didn't vote for him. And what has truly happened? If you want to just talk about the health care program, well, when he first campaigned, he talked about universal health care. But then he settled for the same kind of health care plan that Mitt Romney instituted in Massachusetts, which is nothing but a insurance program. It wasn't a health care program. It was an insurance program. So,
well,
really,
I'm
sorry. Go ahead.
I must say that Barack Obama is one election, one person, one presidential election. Where it is critically important to vote is in your state and local races. When you're deciding who you're going to put which judge you're going to put on the bench that your loved ones may have to stand before. Who are you putting in your city and county seats? Things of this nature. It is important to vote, and I believe Sister Fannie Lou Hamer, if she was on the air with me tonight, would beg to differ with you that the vote does matter.
I agree with you, sister. I have to say the vote does matter.
Okay.
I believe.
I like to say that our ancestors, during Reconstruction, they sent their own candidates. They picked their candidates from among themselves that represented them. And that's who they voted for.
Mm-hmm.
We have no input as to who's on the ballot.
Yes, we do. We have to send our own candidates there. But part of the problem is when you send a candidate, when you want to mobilize your own candidate and send them to that poll, to get on that poll sheet, you got to put your money behind that. You need to support that candidate all the way. And we don't write checks for our politicians. We don't write checks for the activists in our community. There are a lot of us, like me and others, who probably would run if we could get the support of our communities to send us there. It
Amen.
Takes money.
Yeah. And I just want to be on record. I'm supporting Mandela Barnes here in Wisconsin.
You have two parties. And if you don't toe the line for the party, you're not going to get on the ballot.
That's true.
They will keep you off the ballot.
That's not necessarily true.
If you can run your own candidate, Then I'm 100% for voting. If I had been in Jackson, Mississippi, I would have voted for Chukwuma Lumumba.
If you get people to support your campaign,
I'm not going to vote in no election with no Bloomberg and no people like that.
What I'm saying, how you get on that ballot is you get people to support your campaign and get out there and collect those X number of signatures you need to get your name on the ballot. You're on the ballot. That's how that works.
Is how it works. That you get a team together, you go out and get the signatures, you got enough signatures on the ballot, you got the people to support you. A young man, 19 years old, is elected in Wisconsin to the state assembly. You know.
My baby. Yes, he is.
Good. I mean, and I understand that voting on the local level is really where it counts, but by the same token, here we are, coming up on 400 years of being in this madness that we truly need to analyze and look at, and having had now more elected officials than we have at any other time in our history. And yet our condition as a people is worse and getting worse by the day. And so to me, you know, I don't see any benefit for this process, because ultimately it's going to be our destruction. And that's what has been planned, and that is what's being planned. And so I'm just going to keep it real. I'm a person, on my radio program, we talk about independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people. And based upon what I have seen and continue to see, there really is no alternative. That is the choice. But our
How is that working for us right now?
Our people continue to beg and plead and hope and pray and march and demonstrate. So how is that working for us?
So what are we all saying? There is no one single thing that's working. Maybe we should coordinate that and collaborate and bring all of these different tentacles together and to formulate one plan to make this system work for us. Because
the system will never work for us. That's the point.
I'm talking about, I didn't say their system. I'm talking about all these different things Oshie and I were just talking about. You know, he was talking about the sovereignty piece and that piece. So what I'm saying is none of those things in and of themselves separately, including the vote, has worked for us as a people, as a culture. So we need to look at all of those things that we've been doing separately that has not worked for us as a whole, as a people, as a culture, and figure out, do we need to combine those ideologies? What do we need to do?
Let's ask Brother Nkosi. He represents that young generation. This is your Black Lives Matter group and movement. What do you say, Brother Nkosi, to this conversation that's going on there? I love the debate.
Basically, I just believe that we definitely need to unite. I mean, the black dollar is so powerful. I mean, we're probably the most largest group financially in the United States. We spend money, you know, but we do not unite. We do not support one another. We need to start supporting one another. I agree with that wholeheartedly. It starts with, you know, electing people that represent us. So, I mean, I know that we talked about, you know, Brother Obama and, you know, he not doing anything for the community, but I mean, he was a representative. He was the first African-American president. I mean, that says a lot. So my kids can look up at to him and say that they can become president. That's a start to me. So, you know, maybe he didn't do all the things that we thought he would do, but I think we still need to support him and support people that look like us and continue to work together versus against each other. Even in this debate, I think that we can come to a common ground of what we truly need to do. And I believe our ancestors did give a lot for us to be able to vote. So, you know, I agree with the sister on that because it's important that we do. Because when we don't vote, we get people like Trump in office.
Okay. Brother Griffin, what did you get? You said you wanted to say something? Brother Griffin?
Yes, sir. Are you there?
Yes, sir. You said you wanted to say something.
Are you there?
Yeah, you here. I can hear you.
Okay. Look, I just want to ask a few questions. Number one, you can go to Mix What I Like, and Jared Ball from Morgan State, a professor there, he broke down the myth of how much money we have is only 13% of the population and being actually in the bottom percentile for wealth as a people.
Right.
I'm not going to argue the point. I'm just going to put it out there, and you can listen to the broadcast later. It is a myth. The myth of buying power from black people is a Nielsen project talking about necessities that people buy. It has nothing to do with this discretionary wealth. The other thing I'm going to say is we have to understand since Citizens United allowed PACs, which is rich white people, to be able to supply money anywhere across this country, you don't just run a campaign and win because an outsider can make $1 million to $2 million donation. And media, in the words of Malcolm X, is the most powerful entity on the planet. It can make the guilty innocent and make the innocent guilty. That is exactly what happened to Cynthia McKinney. Google her. The other thing is, when we talk about this aspirational thing about what Obama did, I'm going to say to that young man, as a 65-year-old, I saw the very same thing in the 40-some people that are now composed the CBC. They got in, they have personal wealth, and the people in their communities are suffering. That's why when people tell me don't demonize Maxine Waters, I say go to California and find out the demographic makeup of her district. California has run black people out. The majority is now Hispanic, and even she is suspect in the next time she goes up for election. But no one said anything about her caping for her husband who runs a bank. We have to, if we're going to have black representation, the first thing we need is a political education, reciprocity. Politics is distribution of wealth in a capitalist society. So to tell me that just voting will save you, no, it won't.
Okay.
I agree. It won't save you.
Brother Timothy, I never said that. You got a comment on this issue? Got to remember, keep it short, though.
You got me, brother?
Brother Timothy?
Roger?
Yeah, right.
Yes, I'm going to keep it short. Yes, I will. I'll get passionate. Yeah. Sorry, sir. I would say to sir that I ran for office 4 times, a committee person. I won that. I ran for Congress in 2000. I ran for state rep in 2010 and 2012 I ran. And I looked at people like Adam Caton Powell, Kenneth Gibson, and those people were able to bring goods in their community. We need more than just politics. We definitely need wealth. But I think to the process and also being elected in an office, I was able to do some things in my community, and I need the office to do it other than what the skills I have as an educator. So I believe that we need people with our mindset, like the one that on this panel right now and the ones that are calling in, to have the black community in mind. Because me in politics, I'm race first with ethics,
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I'll keep it short. Mm-hmm.
Right. When you ran for your position, what did you think that you were going to be able to do if you would have gotten elected?
Well, you got to remember, as an educator, I ran for state rep twice.
Okay.
And the issues with schools in Philadelphia, it's a state issue. And they closed schools in Philadelphia and built condos.
Yeah.
See? So that was an issue to me. A union member who's an educator, who comes from a family of educators. Mm-hmm. That was my passion. And when I ran for Congress, my thing was to pass. But I ran for a position in Congress in Philadelphia because it was a... It was the constituents was like 85% black,
right.
And I said, you need a black representative to go to Washington to bring the goods, who knows what's going on in the community, and it was a white man who took the position, who did not have the needs and wherewithal of what black people want.
Mm-hmm.
So when you have black people in your area who are your constituents, and they vote you in, that's when you want to make Juneteenth a part of a situation. That's when you're back to doom day. That's when you bring your culture and your people and your community with the goods and economics and schools and businesses and hospitals. That's what a black community consists of. You can do that through politics and masses of money. So that's why I want somebody that looks like you representing me in my community.
Absolutely.
Exactly. Yes. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we are really drawing down to the closing hour. It's been a wonderful, dynamic, energetic conversation. Appreciate all of you on our panel for what you've done. So I want to ask you to close it out with maybe a closing remarks. Just in general, make the remarks around the idea is what can Black America look for in the next 6-7 months to a year, in terms of political, economic agendas, from what we've seen and what we've been witnessing over the last 3 or 4 months. And I'm going to start off with you, Brother Nkosi. What do you think?
I want to start off by saying I believe that voting is important. We need to get Trump out in 2020. Right now, I'm looking at Kavanaugh. I'm looking at Gorsuch, and I'm looking at affirmative action being repealed, and the black community is under attack. I honestly, truly believe that. And it wasn't more evident than when Donald Trump yesterday apologized to Kavanaugh for the nation, mind you, for the nation, for what he went through. But he never apologized to the families of Philando Castile or Alton Sterling or Tamir Rice or Freddie Gray or anyone else. You know, so those are the things that you really want to think about. And that's why I really believe that, you know, voting for someone that can support us is critically important. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Dr. Belcher.
Thank you. Black people, certainly I agree with Nkosi, are under attack by within this country in general. And I won't single out any one particular entity. I'm just going to say systemically. And trust and believe that black people as a whole are under attack. Black and women are certainly under attack. And please, let's remember to hold up the women within the black community, because as go the women and children, our community goes our community.
All right. Thank you. Okay. Brother Oshie.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the conversation as always, brothers and sisters. Oh, yes. And I thank you, Dr. Rogers, for providing this forum here on Black Reality Think Tank. And, you know, as a Pan-Africanist, as a cultural nationalist, as somebody who truly believes in sovereignty for African people, it can't happen here. Mm-hmm. And it will never happen here. We can't do anything here independently or in a way that would be, I mean, we're in the midst of an open and sworn enemy. And if we can't, and I know how they control the narrative, we really can't see it, but we must understand that and move accordingly. Thank you, brothers and sisters. Thank you. Hotel.
Thank you, Brother Ocean.
Hotel.
Brother White, take us home.
I just like to ask the question. Mm-hmm. Does anybody know who counts the votes?
They're usually counted electronically. I'm not sure your question, but at voting polls, they're counted electronically. It's computerized.
Well, listen, what he's saying is you're just like what happened in Ohio, that they had, I think it was the corporation was Dybo, and they told Bush, we're going to deliver the votes for you. It was on HBO. It was an HBO documentary of how they manipulate and deal with the voting. I mean, once again, brothers and sisters, this is a corrupt system. Mm-hmm. And the people who run it are amoral, and they believe in the dominance and supremacy of Caucasians, and they'll do everything to maintain that, to maintain and sustain the privilege they created for themselves.
Okay. In Bush versus Gore in Florida, Gore won on Gore won on that night, and the next morning Bush won.
You're right. All right, Brother White. I definitely appreciate that. To our audience, our listening audience, we thank you so much for joining us and listening, and to our callers, Brother Griffin, Brother Timothy of Philadelphia, Sister Shannon, and all the others that were there online, as well as our internet audience. We appreciate this. This is the Black Reality Think Tank. As we said, we are here every Tuesday from 8 to 10 p.m. We're also on Blog Talk Radio on Saturdays from 4 to 6. We do have another program on Sundays from 11 to midnight called Gospel Gold. It is a program that talks about the history of gospel music in America. And that's hosted by Reverend Michael Rogers. And so that's every Sunday from 11 to 12. You can go to our Facebook page, Black Reality Think Tank, and all of our programs, both the ones here as well as on Blog Talk, are archived there. Or you can go to timeforanawakening.com and find all of our productions there as well. We thank you for being with us. This has been a wonderful and dynamic discussion. We'll be back again next Tuesday with another dynamic talk. We look forward to you joining us, and have a wonderful, wonderful, and productive week. Thank you.
Be blessed.
Thank you. Peace, family.
Black as you, black as me, black as us, black as free. Black as me, black as me, black as us, black as free. Black as us, black as me, black as us, black as free. Black as free, black as me, black as us, black as free. Black as you, black as me, black as us, black as free. Black as me, black as me, black as us, black as free. Black as us, black as me.
No, Melissa con todo el mundo. Everybody got to stay home, dude. Like, y'all do, y'all trying to do too much. And then, time and now, got to go to a boy town. Remember that?
Black as me, black as us, black as free. Black as you, black as me, black as us, black as free. Black as me, black as us, black as free. Black as us.